The study tonight is very similar to what we looked at this morning, but it is more of a textual study, whereas this morning's lesson was more topical in nature. I'm not known, I don't think, for having really good titles, and I didn't spend a long time coming up with this title for this lesson tonight. But when you read 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 3 through 6, you have a picture that is drawn of God's people that I think we need to have. In verse 2, we're called teachers. And we need to recognize the responsibility that we have before God as teachers of His Word. But it's in verses 3, 4, 5, and 6 where we read about three job descriptions. Three tasks that we have to accomplish as God's people, but they're described to us in very common ways, especially common in the first century. They would readily understand what this meant to be in the first century. We may not understand it as well, and they would understand the application that would need to be made immediately into the life of a Christian. And so tonight, I want us to look at this passage. I hope you've got your Bible. If you don't, steal one from somebody next to you or borrow the one from the pew in front of you. I want us to look at these verses and talk about God's soldier, God's athlete, and God's farmer. Because, folks, that's who we are. You might not know it, but you're a soldier that belongs to God. Some of you may not feel too athletic. Some of us don't look too athletic, but we're all athletes that belong to God. And I don't know that many of us in here are farmers, but we are all farmers that belong to God. Look at this passage in the very first two verses of the reading, verses 3 and 4. It says, "You therefore must endure hardship as a good soldier of Jesus Christ." Do you realize that as a soldier, we must endure hardships? When you go back and you look at this passage, it's not just the fact that you are a soldier that means you will endure hardships, but the fact that you are a good soldier that you will endure hardships. You may endure hardships if you're not such a good soldier, but probably most of them are self-inflicted. You read about some of these stories on battlefields of old, and even some even over in Iraq, where some have had self-inflicted injuries. Well, maybe those weren't the best of soldiers. But the hardships that are being discussed here are hardships that come upon you because you are a good soldier of Christ. And as good soldiers, we must make, as in our service to God, we must make sacrifices. And as you begin to think about that list of sacrifices that we need to make, there's a rather long list, and you can come up with more. But I want you to think about this from a soldier's standpoint. A soldier joins the army. A soldier joins the Marines. A soldier joins whatever military outfit. What kind of sacrifices do they make? You begin thinking of all that they endure as they are separated from their family and friends. You think about that soldier on the battlefield who is exposed to difficult situations, who on that battlefield becomes physically exhausted. They have long hours, often without much sleep. You begin to look at him, and he is one that frequently has hunger and thirst. He frequently faces dangers, even death, and most often, he doesn't receive the credit that he deserves. He does all this hard work, but the credit seems inadequate. But we're not talking about the soldier on the battlefield tonight. We're talking about us. Do these things describe you? Do these things that would describe a soldier in a battlefield, do they describe you on the battlefield for God? You know, some of them do. Some of them may apply to you more than some of the others may. But the fact is that the soldier on the battlefield, no matter how many of these things that he endures, he never gives up. He never turns back. And folks, that needs to be our resolve. that no matter what kind of hardships come upon us as good soldiers of Christ, that we resolve that we will never give up. We'll never turn back. We will never retreat from our service to God. Jesus was up front with us, was he not? Jesus was up front with us, telling us from the very beginning that if you follow me, that you will suffer hardships, that you will suffer persecutions. Jesus wasn't trying to hide this from us in the Sermon on the Mount. In the very beginning verses of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus is talking about this fact. He's not hiding it from us at all. So the Bible tells us that if we're going to serve God, 2 Timothy chapter 3 and verse 12, if we're going to serve God, then we ought to expect hardships to come upon us. Not just for being a soldier, but for being a good soldier. And as we serve God, and as we are there on the battlefield, come back to 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 4. And notice that this passage says, if you want to be a good soldier, you must not become entangled with the affairs of this life. That word entangled literally means you're not to weave yourself in. You're not to get involved with the affairs of this life. The word was used in the first century of that sheep that would go out into the field, and there was that sheep who would get his wool stuck in the thorns, and he was entangled in the thorns to the point that he couldn't move. And God says if we are going to be good soldiers, we must do all that we can not to become entangled in the affairs of this life, not to be weaved in with the affairs of this life. How can that sheep without any doubt not get entangled in those thorns? Not get anywhere near them. Brethren, that needs to be our resolve. We know what those thorns are. Luke chapter 8 and verse 14, when Jesus is explaining the parable of the sower, he talks about that seed that fell among the thorns. And there were those riches and cares and pleasures of this life that choked the Word of God out. Brethren, there are riches and cares and pleasures of this life that we, like that sheep, don't even need to get near, lest we become entangled in them. That sheep that becomes entangled all of a sudden needs somebody else to come along and help him to be freed. And if there's nobody else to come along and help that sheep to be freed, he'll just stay there. The Bible calls us sheep. Sometimes sheep are not the smartest animals in the world. I don't think it was by accident that God chose the metaphor of sheep to talk about us, because sometimes we're not the smartest folks in the world. We'll see those thorns over there. We'll see the cares and the riches and the plate. Oh, but that won't bother me. And we get as close to that edge as we can. God says if you want to be a good soldier, you must maintain your focus. You must maintain your focus on God and not allow yourself to become diverted by these affairs of life in which you can become entangled in. Soldiers of old, and even today, I suppose. But soldiers of old were not permitted to engage in certain activities. They were not permitted to have certain relationships. They were not permitted to have certain occupations, lest those relationships and those activities and those occupations or anything else that might become involved in their life might divert them from their primary task. Think about that. The soldier was not allowed to have a certain relationship. He was not allowed to engage in a certain activity. He was not allowed to have a certain occupation, lest those things take him away from what his primary task was. If we are good soldiers, does that not apply to us? If we are good soldiers, are there relationships that we need to stay away from? Activities we need to stay away from? Occupations that we need to stay away from? Here's the Christian soldier on the battlefield, and we must not allow the affairs of this life to ever take priority over what God has given us to do. But folks, I think we let that happen. I think we let it happen. From 10 years in working with young people, I think we've allowed it to happen in homes where school activities, and the kids will like me for this one, and even school homework takes priority over the church. What does that say about our priorities? Do we need an education? Yeah, we need an education. But what's more important than an education? I think we allow it to happen in our jobs. Well, I can't do this, I can't do that because, well, I've just got to work. My job all of a sudden becomes more important. I'm not talking about whether you're at church or not. I'm not talking about whether you're at activities or not. I'm talking about being a Christian 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. And all of a sudden, I think there are times where we allow our job to interfere with us being Christians. This passage is talking about us having a wholehearted, concentrated dedication to God. That I don't come to Him half-hearted. I don't come to Him with my leftovers. I come to God as a good soldier of Christ, and I'm not allowing myself to get even close to becoming entangled in the affairs of this life because my number one goal in this life is to please God. Is that your number one goal? Is that your number one goal as a Christian soldier? How many of us think about Christianity being our vocation? How many of us think about Christianity being our occupation? Think about it being our job. Folks, in reality, that's what it is. God has given us a job. He has selected our career for us. But you know, He didn't force it on you, did He? You came to God with your resume, didn't you? And say, I'd like to sign up for this job, please. You of your own free will said, God, I want to give my life to You. And maybe it was that we did that without looking at the job description and all that it entailed. But where are we when we begin to allow Christianity to become more of our hobby, become more of what we do in our spare time, rather than what we do with our entire life? How much is Christianity a part of your life? When you look at your entire day, is there a part of your day when you're not a Christian? Everything that's involved in our life, including our jobs. Including our jobs. Maybe I should say especially our jobs. But everything that's involved in our lives must be secondary to being a Christian. And if we allow anything to take priority over being a Christian, we have missed the mark. We must, as good soldiers, endure hardships. We must, as good soldiers, maintain our focus. Come back to 2 Timothy chapter 2. Why are we doing this? He gives us the purpose in verse 4. No one engaged in warfare entangles himself with the affairs of this life. Why? Why don't I get involved in these things? The reason is that he may please him who enlisted him as a soldier. My very purpose, the very purpose I endure these hardships, is not for my credit. The very purpose that I don't engage in the affairs of this life, the purpose that I give of maintaining my focus, is because I want to please God. It's not only my purpose, it is my goal in life. I'm not concerned about fulfilling my needs. I'm concerned about fulfilling the desires of my commander-in-chief. You're a soldier. You've got a commander-in-chief. And our desire ought to be to please Him in all that we do. It's our purpose, it's our goal, and in reality, it ought to be our very motivation. For all decisions that we make, our motivation ought to be, I want to do this in order that I might please God. I'm not interested in serving the world. I'm not interested in pleasing the world. They don't have anything to offer. I'm interested in pleasing the God of heaven because He has everything to offer. Here I am striving to please God and recognizing that this whole thing is a learning process. Ephesians chapter 5 and verse 10 talks about that. In verse 8 it says, walk as children of light. Verse 10 says, finding out what is acceptable to the Lord. How do you find out what's acceptable to God? You get in His Word and you find out what pleases Him, and that's what you do. You get in His Word and you find out what displeases Him, and that's what you avoid. It's a learning process. Nobody says that when you become a Christian, all of a sudden you've got all the answers. Nobody says that when you become a Christian, you know everything you need to do to please God, and you know everything you need to stay away from so that you don't make God angry. It's a learning process, and the more that we get into the book, the more we will recognize that. And set as our number one priority, serving God. Paul says in 2 Corinthians 5 and verse 9, that's our aim. That's what we're aiming for, is to please God. If you had to say, here is the number one aim of my life, what would it be? Paul says our number one aim is to serve God, to please God, and that's who our loyalty needs to be, is to be under Christ and to Him alone. Look in verse 5. Verses 3 and 4 describe our responsibility to God as a good soldier, as a soldier who is focused on what he is doing. But verse 5 describes our responsibility as an athlete, as a dedicated athlete. I don't know how many of you have ever been involved in athletics of some kind, maybe in years past, maybe in school. Somewhere along the way, perhaps you or some people in your family and people that you have known have been involved in athletics. Is that something that we take seriously? If we started talking about college football, I would suspect that there'd be some folks in here that would take that pretty seriously and would argue about Auburn or would argue about Arkansas or would argue about Florida or would argue about whatever your favorite team is. I think it'd be fun just to put some of you in a room and lock the door and let you have at it and see who comes out. But we take our athletics seriously, and so does God. You begin looking at what it takes to be an athlete, and not just an athlete for God, but to be an athlete in today's world and a dedicated athlete. Think about what he does, and I didn't come up with an exhausted list, but here's some things that a dedicated athlete will do. He's going to keep to his schedule. I'm not talking about the fly-by-night athlete. I'm talking about the guy who's serious about what he's doing. He will keep to his schedule and he won't let anything interfere. He will engage in prescribed workouts and training. None of this describes me, by the way. He will live a strictly separated life. He will control his appetite and follow a rigid diet. He will push himself to do more and to do better all of the time. He will set his standard of fitness and not deviate from it. Do you know any athletes that describe this? I think about Taylor Reeves. He's a dedicated athlete. Think about some of the young men. Shane Studer used to be a dedicated athlete. Who have come through this congregation. Sorry, Shane. Who have come through this congregation. They were dedicated athletes. They had a workout regimen. They had a diet that they tried to stick to. They had a schedule by which they lived in order that they might be the best athlete. Aaron, I'm sorry I didn't see you. Aaron, also a good athlete. That they might be, I'm starting to look around and I'm digging my, you know, Tim Fry used to be a good athlete. That, what was I saying? They dedicate themselves. I'll just close my eyes so I don't see any more athletes. They dedicate themselves to what they're doing. Now take all of these descriptions about an athlete and apply them to you. You're an athlete for God. Do you have a schedule that you stick to? Do you have a prayer schedule that you stick to? Do you have a reading schedule that you stick to? Do you have certain things involved in your Christian life that you will not give up for anything? Is there a particular diet by which you feed yourself and you won't deviate from it? Have you given your life over so much to being an athlete for God that no one can pull you away from it? That's what a dedicated athlete is. A dedicated athlete in the world, you'll call them up and say, hey, can we go and do such? No, I've got to go. I'm working out this afternoon. A dedicated Christian will get a call from someone who's not a Christian and they'll say, no, I've got to go do something else today. Because that's where our focus is. And again, we said it about that dedicated soldier. We say it about that dedicated athlete. This is not some kind of spare time thing. There's no such thing as a spare time Christian. That's a contradiction in terms. You cannot be a Christian and be a spare time Christian. That's not what God is looking for. God is looking for that whole time Christian, that whole time dedication of life, where that Christian goes out and, as Paul says in this same imagery in 1 Timothy chapter 4 and verse 7, he goes out and he exercises himself toward godliness. And that needs to be our focus. As athletes for God, that we are exercising ourselves toward godliness. Come back to 2 Timothy. And I think the real emphasis in 2 Timothy chapter 2 and verse 5 upon this athlete is not just that he is one who exercises self-discipline, but the real focus here is that he competes according to the rules. Also, if anyone competes in athletics, he is not crowned unless he competes according to the rules. In athletics, there are rules. There are standards by which you must play. There are standards that govern the competition, and they must be followed. And if you don't follow them, you're disqualified. I don't know if any of you watched football today. Why do they have penalties? Why do they have those little yellow flags that they throw out? Why do they have the whole review system? Why do they have all of these rules? Why do they protect the quarterback so much? That's what I want to know. Why all these rules to protect the quarterback? Let him take a hit. He's a football player. Why all these rules? So that you can have an orderly game, an orderly competition. And if there's someone who does not play by the rules, he'll be penalized. And if there's someone who refuses to play by the rules, he's going to be ejected. Get out of here, because we're going to play by the rules. You're disqualified. What about the Christian athlete? Are there rules and standards by which the Christian athlete is governed? Is it possible that the Christian athlete could live in such a way against these rules that he could become disqualified? Over in 2 Corinthians chapter 13 and verse 5, the Bible talks about the necessity for us to examine ourselves. Paul says, examine yourselves as to whether you are in the faith. Test yourselves. Do you know yourselves that Jesus Christ is in you, unless indeed you are disqualified? In 1 Corinthians chapter 9 and verse 27, Paul talked about the fact that even he himself, he could preach the gospel till he was blue in the face to everybody on the face of the earth, but if he didn't live according to the rules and standards that God had given, even the apostle Paul could become disqualified in the eyes of God. What kind of athlete are you? Are you an athlete that is adhering to the rules and the standards that God has given to us? God says you will not be crowned if you don't compete by them. And it's not enough just to know the rules. That's not what it is. It's not just enough to say, well, yeah, I know what's in there. The responsibility is to live by them. Book of James has contrast throughout, and it contrasts in chapter 1 the fact that the difference between hearing the word and doing the word. It's not enough just to be a hearer. Not just enough to know and hear the rules. We've got to be out doing them. It's not enough just for us to have faith, James chapter 2. We've got to have faith that is coupled with works. What kind of athlete are you? Are you an athlete on God's team that is adhering to His laws? That's the kind of athlete we've got to be. The only way to please God and to run the Christian race successfully is to adhere to His laws, to be diligent, to present ourselves approved unto God, a workman who does not need to be ashamed, handling aright the word of truth. But you know, we live in a day and age where folks disdain rules. They disdain the very existence of laws and regulations and restrictions. They disdain the very existence of these kind of things. They disdain them even in religion. They don't want rules and regulations and restrictions. Brethren, let us not be slack. Let us not give in to the way of our society. Let us not give in to the temptation to relax the rules and the standards of God. You've seen that bumper sticker that says, "God said it, I believe it, that settles it." I've always been amazed by that second line. You know, that second line doesn't matter in that context. God said it, that settles it. And that's the way we need to live our lives. Whether I believe it or not, there are rules and standards by which we are to be governed in our lives. And what amazes me is that people recognize the need for those in athletics. They recognize that. You can't walk on the football field without rules and regulations. They understand the need for it in athletics, but for some reason, when it comes to the most important thing about life and being a Christian, they don't want any rules or standards to live by. But the dedicated athlete is one who lives according to the rules. And then the third part of this part about the dedicated athlete is he is one who presses for the prize. That's the very reason. It's the very reason that he is doing these things. The very reason he exercises discipline in his life. The very reason that he lives according to the rules is in order that he might be crowned. In order that he might press on towards that image, towards that goal, towards that prize. And when you begin to look at the athlete doesn't just hope that he's going to win that prize. The very reason, the whole objective of competition is to win. You know any football players, you know any football teams, you know any basketball teams, basketball players, race car drivers, whatever it is, that go out on the field or the track and they say, "Well, I don't really care if I win today or not." Then why are you doing it? You don't meet anybody in athletics that is not concerned about winning. That's the whole reason they're involved. And brethren, that needs to be the whole reason we're Christians, is to press for that prize. In Philippians 3, that's what Paul said. He said, "This one thing I do, I'm putting those things of my past, I'm putting them behind me, and I'm pressing on toward the prize. Pressing on toward the goal of the upward call of God in Christ Jesus." That was his number one motivation, is to press on toward that prize. And at the end of his life, in 2 Timothy chapter 2, that's what he says he had done. 2 Timothy chapter 4, Paul says, "I have fought the good fight." You see him being a soldier. "I have finished the course." You see him being an athlete. "I have kept the faith. Therefore, there is laid up for me the crown of righteousness." He had kept the faith. He had kept those rules and regulations and had focused on the prize of heaven and would not take his eyes off of it. Very quickly, I want us to consider this persevering farmer in verse 6. You've got in verses 3 and 4 the focused soldier. Then you've got the dedicated athlete. What about this persevering farmer? How in the world are we supposed to be like a farmer? The basic rule of farming is that nothing will come from nothing. If that farmer doesn't go out and plant any seeds in the field, what's he going to get? Nothing. If he doesn't put any effort into his work, what is he going to get? Nothing. Nothing comes from nothing. And as persevering farmers, we must labor to obtain this reward. Look in verse 6. The hard-working farmer must be first to partake of the crops. Hard-working. Literally means that he works to the point of exhaustion. I think on the face of this earth, farming has got to be one of the most difficult jobs that there is. Again, not an exhaustive list, but think about what the farmer does. He plants the seed in the ground. He must supply the water and the fertilizer to help it grow. Effort must be made to remove and control the weeds. The farmer must work diligently while there is daylight. The farmer must depend on God. He can't do it all. He's got to depend on God for the sunshine and the rain. The farmers must do all of this hard work and then learn to wait patiently for the results. You think about farmers that you know or have known. And this very much describes what their work was about. Take these things and apply it to yourself. If we are a farmer, are you a hard-working farmer? Are you planting the seed? Are you watering it? Are you allowing God to give the increase, relying on Him, depending on Him? And then that last one, are you waiting patiently for the results? Sometimes as God's farmers, we want instant gratification. We want the seed to be planted, to grow, to have a mature Christian, to appoint him as an elder and say, good for me, I've just converted an elder. We need to learn to wait patiently for that seed to germinate, for that seed to grow, and to recognize that it may take more time with some folks than it will for others. This applies to not only our efforts in trying to teach, I think this applies to our efforts in trying to be parents. And I put this in here as much as for me as for anybody else, to learn with our own children to plant the seed, to do all that we can to nourish it, to water it, and then to wait patiently. Austin Reeves was baptized this morning. Baptized because of a lot of work. When was that seed first planted? What has Chuck done over the years to water that seed? And how patiently must a parent wait for that to take effect? And not just in a spiritual sense, in every sense as we try to raise our children. But I think the real focus here, and this is the final point, I think the real focus in verse 6 is not only on the fact that this farmer is hardworking, but I think the wording here is interesting, that the hard-working farmer must be first to partake of the crops. He must be. God doesn't say, he's not saying it in a declarative sense that he says, well, the farmer, of course, is the first one to partake of the crops. He says the farmer is, not just is, he must be the first one to partake of the crops. You look at any farmer and his incentive, is the incentive that he has for hard work is that fruitful harvest. And when that harvest comes, that farmer is entitled, due to the hard work, is entitled to receive a reward from taking the very first. How does this apply to you as a farmer? Have you ever taught a Bible class? Have you ever sat down to talk to somebody about the Bible? Have you ever had somebody ask you a Bible question and you go home and you begin studying to answer that Bible question? And whether it's talking to somebody at work, whether it's talking to a family member about the Bible, whether it's sitting in one of these classrooms teaching, whether it's standing behind a pulpit and preaching, who is it that benefits first from that study? The teacher, the one who's done all of the study. Our responsibility before God is to be a hard-working farmer. And God knows how difficult it is to teach others the gospel. And so He says, you will be able to partake first of the reward. You will have the benefit first. And oftentimes, it's the teacher who learns more over the course of a quarter than it is the students. And oftentimes, it's the preacher who learns more from a sermon than it is those who are listening. Not because people aren't listening, but because of the hours of study that go into these classes, the hours of study that go into you answering somebody's Bible question, and you are gleaning from that first. And it's not just those situations when you work trying to strengthen somebody else, you benefit first. When you work trying to encourage others and to build them up, you benefit first. And it's God who tells us that we partake first of the blessings of our own efforts. Paul was condemning the Jews in Romans chapter 2, but he asked a question that I think fits here. Although it's meant in condemnation, I think it fits for us. When Paul asks in Romans chapter 2 and verse 21, "You who teach, do you not teach yourself?" I've heard it often said that when a preacher gets up and he starts pointing his finger and saying, "You need to do this, and you need to do this, and you need to do this, and you need to do this," that he's got that finger pointed at you and he's got three more pointing right back to himself. It's got to have application to the teacher first. It's got to have benefit to the teacher first. And the more you will dedicate yourself to being a persevering farmer for God, the more you will not only help other people grow, the more you will grow. Think about these three things. God's soldier, His athlete, and His farmer. What kind of soldier are you? The Bible tells us that the worldly soldier who entangles himself in the affairs of this life cannot please the commander-in-chief. What kind of athlete are you? The Bible tells us in these passages that the lawless Christian athlete who fails to abide by the rules and the standards that are found within the gospel, that he cannot receive the crown for which he is pressing. What kind of farmer are you? The Bible tells us that the lazy Christian farmer who refuses the hard work that's necessary as a child of God will never partake first of his fruits. When you begin looking at God's soldier, at God's athlete, at God's farmer, we must all diligently keep our eye on the goal. The goal of victory for the soldier, the joy of that crown of winning for that athlete.